This is the first class of the fifth year of this particular class. It began on August 9th of 1964, and it's continued now for, oh, some odd 200 meetings. Today, possibly fittingly enough, we have a revelation to discuss with you, which should go a long way to clarify the reasons behind the Christ teaching and to accentuate why we cannot settle for the Norman Newman concepts of love and of righteousness, why we must go deeper and deeper and deeper in order to discover very important secrets within the Bible, within our human activities, that can eventually liberate us from the problems that seem to besiege us at every turn. Now today, for example, we are seated here, just a small group, and around this world today, let's say there are 30 million people attending church. It might surprise you to know that that is exactly the number of people in this United States who were admitted to hospitals during the past year. 30 million. Right at this instant, there's 1.5 million in hospitals today, this day. And while we're learning the message of Jesus on Sunday, there is just as many an individual finding that the message of Jesus he learned on Sunday does not work on Monday. There's bitterness, there's hate, there's revenge. There are these insidious human reactions within us, and they persist in spite of all our learning, in spite of all our study, in spite of all our deep-hearted sincerity. So when a piece of knowledge comes along that can clarify some of these issues, there's a deep sense of gratitude. Now, I believe there is such a piece of knowledge for us today. Something, I can assure you, we have not heard before, or read before, or seen before, or thought of before. And so today, on our beginning of our fifth year, I'm grateful that we have this to bring to you. It is very likely that you'll hear more about it from the various corridors of science, psychiatry, psychology, and maybe from religion too. Now I want you to imagine that you are at a congress of scientists, and that the complete audience is composed of distinguished figures in the various fields of science, medicine, psychiatry, psychology, education, and there is on the stage at the moment the beginning of a demonstration of hypnosis. And the hypnotist there is a renowned doctor. He's going to demonstrate to this distinguished audience how he can control the human mind. So he calls for witnesses or volunteers and an assortment of people, doctors, lawyers, educators, people who are successful in their own endeavors raise their hands and say, I'll willingly volunteer. And so he selects an even dozen, puts them through a few paces, dismisses those who show that they have not any desire to be obedient to his commands, and he's left with an even 8 or 9 people. 5 men, let's say, and 3 women. And now he says, I'm going to demonstrate how I can control the mind of these 8 individuals. And within 3 to 5 minutes, he has. They're all in a trance. Their heads are on their chests. They're just little rag dolls standing up. You may have seen this. I have. You may have read about such experiments in various colleges. And now he has 8 scientists, psychiatrists, psychologists, standing in front of him, and they are completely in a trance. They don't know what's going on about them. They are completely under his individual will. And now he talks to the first one. He picks a man, and he tells him that I am going to light this cigarette lighter, and every time I light it, your feet are going to burn. Do you understand? And the individual says, yes, I understand. Then he lights the cigarette lighter, and the individual says, ouch, my feet are burning. And so he does this several times while the individual is under a trance to establish that the conditions are set. Every time he lights the lighter, this man's feet are going to burn. There's no contact between the lighter and the man's feet. And once this is established, he now takes the man out of his trance. And now, to establish that the man is no longer hypnotized, he says to him, I guess you know what happened in the Republican convention the other day. Oh yes, Nixon got in. And I suppose you know who was selected for his running mate. Oh yes, Agnew. And then they'll discuss things of the day to establish to the audience that this particular subject is not under hypnosis. And then he will say, will you care for a cigarette? Oh yes, be glad to. Takes a pack, hands him one, and he lights it with a lighter. And the minute he lights it, ouch, my feet are burning. The conditioned response works even though the individual is not under hypnosis. Now this is a law, a material law. Once the condition is established in trance, when out of trance, the individual will always respond to the identical condition. And there's nothing he can do to avoid it. He can go on years. He could walk through this earth, and every time somebody lit a cigarette lighter, his feet would burn. The mental suggestion already patterned in his mind from the conditioning during trance becomes a pattern of reaction. Now the feet are not burning, nothing is touching the feet, but the cigarette lighter and the brain and the feet are one unit. And every time that cigarette lighter goes on, this man's feet will burn, no matter where he is or whom he's with. And so the scientist, the hypnotist, now puts him back into trance and says to him, when I light this cigarette lighter, your feet will not burn. And then he does, and the individual's feet do not burn. He does it several more times and takes him out of trance, lights the cigarette lighter, and the man's feet do not burn. But he has proved his point. He can establish a conditioned reflex in that individual. Now he goes to the next one. He picks a sort of a husky woman in her 60s, let's say, very aristocratic, very dignified, a woman who would be the last in the world to appear in public and do a fan dance. He says to her, every time, while she's under hypnosis, every time I light this match, strike a match, you're going to hear music and you're going to get up and you're going to do a Roomba. Do you understand? Yes, I do. He repeats this several times, finally lights the match. And this subject in trance, this very aristocratic woman, hears music. She rises, she does a Roomba. And she does it in front of this distinguished audience of scientists. She's completely unaware of their presence. She's on a channel of one mind, this mind of the hypnotist, and he is completely controlling her reaction. Now, when this is established, he takes her out of hypnosis and asks her if she likes to dance. Oh, yes, but not anymore. Those days are gone. Do you like Latin dancing? Oh, no, never could do that. Well, that's strange. Don't you know you just did one? Oh, you're fooling. I didn't do that. Oh, yes, you did. Audience, did she do one? Yes. And then he looks at her and she says, well, that's, I don't believe you. You're just putting me on. Well, he says, anyway, what are you doing out here at this convention? And she tells him. They discuss things of the day. Meanwhile, of course, the idea is to establish again with the audience that she's no longer in a trance. Perfectly normal. And now he says, care for a cigarette? Oh, thank you. He strikes the match. And to her intense horror, she finds herself hearing music and doing a Roomba all by herself. And there's nothing she can do about it, except now, not being in a trance, she has reacted to the stimulus, but she sees nobody else doing it, and she realizes something is wrong, and she stops. Looks rather queerly, as if to say, what am I doing? And so he talks to her a little more, lights his match again, and she starts the same routine. Now he takes her back into trance, erases it, takes her out, lights the match, no reaction. By taking her back into trance, he erased the pattern from match to brain to prefabricated reaction. And this pattern of behavior is eliminated from her psyche. And finally, one more. A man about 40. And he plants in him the suggestion that when I light this match, you will have ants throughout your whole body and in your shoes as well. Understand? Yes. And then he lights the match. And you see the man wriggly and squirmy, trying to get rid of the ants that he doesn't have. And then through the same processes and back out of the hypnosis, establishing his normalcy and talking to him about sports and things of that character. Have a cigarette? Oh, thank you. Lights the match. And here this normal man, not in hypnosis, squirms and wriggles in agony and has to be stopped from taking his trousers off in front of this distinguished audience. Now, what is established there is that the human mind can be hypnotized, number one. So anyone who feels that the human mind is God's mind must realize that God's mind cannot be hypnotized, and therefore the human mind is not the divine mind. That's number one. Number two is that the human mind can be hypnotized because it isn't a mind. The divine mind, the infinite mind, is the only mind. And there is no other mind. That mind which can be hypnotized is not a second mind. It simply isn't mind at all. What has been hypnotized is sense reaction. And thirdly, is the point that through hypnosis, an individual can be put into a series of behavior patterns, rendering him helpless to do anything but react in those patterns when the proper stimulus is put before his senses. If he hears the match click or he sees the match struck, that is the stimulus, and he will respond not in a pattern of behavior that he wishes to respond in, but in a pattern beyond his ability to prevent. Now then, this is established Science has shown clearly that this is the truth, that the conditioned reflex will always function. Prior to that, Pavlov did it with dogs, as you remember, to bring up saliva reactions. There have been thousands of experiments along the line, so the facts are indisputable. Now here's the newness of it. And it will clarify for you the origin of disease on this earth. When you were born, in your 9-month prenatal period, you did not receive only a body from your mother. You received a consciousness. And that consciousness, during that 9-month period, was hypnotized. In that prenatal period, not in 5 minutes that it takes a hypnotist to put grown intellectual and scientific people into a trance, not in just 5 minutes, but in 9 months, your behavior patterns were established in that pre-infantile consciousness. In other words, you were so conditioned through the consciousness of your mother that dials were set like a thermostat. In this room, for example, there's a thermostat. And you set it at night, and in the morning at 7 a.m., because it's been set that way, whether you do anything or not, automatically that thermostat comes up to 70 degrees, brings the house up to 70 degrees. The furnace responds to that pre-dialed, preconditioned plan. Now, the thermostats in your consciousness were set the same way. There is absolutely no evil on the face of the earth. But you have been preconditioned to respond to stimuli which are not evil, and the evil is not in the stimulus, but in your preconditioned response to it. Now, let me clarify that. The boy, the man, whose feet burned, didn't have burning feet. It would be impossible for a cigarette lighter 10 feet away to burn his feet. But his mind was conditioned to believe he had burning feet. Now go a little deeper and see that the human mind, which is not a mind, has been preconditioned to the belief in a virus. At the age of 2, a virus touches this child. The virus can't give it smallpox, but the preconditioned response built into the child, responding to the virus and helpless to do anything but respond, brings the appearance of smallpox. At 4.5, another virus touches this child, and the preconditioned response in the child can do nothing but respond to that virus. And that gives it diphtheria. I want you to see that there is no disease on this earth, that what you're witnessing is the preconditioned response of a consciousness which has been controlled in its pre-infant days through the consciousness of the parent, which is believing in good and in evil. And that consciousness of the parent is hypnotized, and it is being used by the world consciousness, the world belief. And so we have a pattern of behavior established in the infant through the consciousness of the parent comes world belief, and it has an open target through her consciousness to that infantile consciousness being formed. She has no defense against world belief because she's not even aware of it. She is not a virgin consciousness. She is an impure consciousness. She has been preconditioned in her infantile days. And now that she's to be a mother, she has had 20 or 30 years of conditioning on the earth, as well as the 9 months in her preconception. She totally believes that diphtheria is on earth, that smallpox is on earth, that scarlet fever is on earth, and in fact, during the 9 months, she thinks to herself, "Oh, I just hope my child has 10 toes and 10 fingers. And maybe that his eyes are blue. And that he has Uncle Harry's nose. And Aunt Sarah's cheekbones. And maybe somebody else's disposition. And I certainly hope, oh, how I pray, that he doesn't have that tendency on my husband's side to consumption. Or that Uncle Harry's hair lips doesn't come into this." Now, all of this is a human consciousness, and just as she nourishes that child with her body, she nourishes that child with her consciousness. She's giving it a form, but she's giving it a consciousness, and the consciousness she's giving it is impure. And that consciousness has all its dials set. In that consciousness is the awareness that Uncle Harry has a hair lip, that there are diseases on the earth, that there is evil, that there are disasters, that there are epidemics. Every form of error that the world has known is in that infant consciousness before it becomes an infant. And what happens? From that consciousness, it develops the form and the experiences which bring into visibility the defects that are built into the prenatal consciousness. It doesn't have a chance. It is born and hypnotized into the appearance of a physical form. Now go to Mary. This was a pure consciousness, a virgin consciousness. So pure that God could appear in this consciousness in the form of an angel. And the significance of the angel is that only the pure virgin consciousness, which knows no evil, can receive the presence of God. And then of this consciousness is born one who receives the benefit of the pure consciousness of the parent who is not under a state of hypnosis. The pure consciousness of the parent who knows no evil, through whom the world consciousness cannot send its beliefs of good and evil. And what happens? The child is born of a virgin consciousness. That's its virgin birth. And because it is born of a virgin consciousness, it has a virgin consciousness. There are no thermostats set inside it, so that at the age of 2, when a certain stimulus appears, it will respond with scarlet fever. And when it's an adult, it sees a leper, it cannot respond to a leper. It touches the leper. Why? Because there has been no preconceived pattern of behavior built into its pre-infantile consciousness. Now, this is new. It is also an insight into the depth of the human problem. That is why you find 30 million Americans going to hospitals in 1 year. When you were born, you may be sure your thermostats were already set up, and that every disease and every problem you faced was not a problem, not at all. There is no evil on this earth. There is no disease on this earth. You were reacting because you had no way of not reacting. You were reacting because the thermostat goes on at 7 a.m. and brings the heat of this room up to 70 degrees. You were reacting because the patterns of behavior in your consciousness must react. Unless you take yourself back in to the womb and nullify those patterns and are reborn of the spirit, just as the patient had to be taken back into trance, and the complete suggestion erased,
so that the pattern of behavior was erased, so that in coming out the same stimuli would have no effect, so much the human race. Each of us must re-enter that period when the dials were set through the consciousness of our parents' ignorance, and we received a preconditioned pattern of behavior which automatically reacts to every virus, which is a perfect stimulus for these patterns, and as a result of it we grow into a group of adults preconditioned to disease, fighting it with tooth and nail, with billions of dollars, with millions of personnel, with much factory technology. Still, in spite of it, 30 million Americans per year go to hospitals. We must face the reason, and the reason is that the human mind cannot solve it, because the human mind is hypnotized. That same scientist who is looking for the virus so that he can immunize us against it, he was born of a mother whose consciousness knew good and evil. It doesn't matter what his learning has been. It doesn't matter if you become the head of a religion. You too were born of a mother whose consciousness knew good and evil. We have had assassinations of important people. We have seen Abe Lincoln, the Kennedys, Martin Luther King, and we still believe that God murdered these people. We really believe that. Mrs. Kennedy believes it. Her prayer on TV was to thank God for his inscrutable wisdom and to say that whatever God's will is my will. That is saying that God could witness this murder and do nothing about it. That God could witness 30 million Americans going to hospitals and do nothing about it. And this is saying God is a murderer. This is saying it through ignorance, thinking it's God's will that people be assassinated. It's God's will that infants less than a year old have to be operated on in their hearts. We have a doctor in this country. What is his name? Cutler? He has operated on 4,000 hearts, and 1,000 of them are infants. Do you think it's God's will that these hearts be mutilated? That they must be operated upon? Do you really think that they have bad hearts? I'm telling you what it is. This is the consciousness of good and of evil built into a preconditioned response, and either that infant or the parent knows it's happened. You remove the preconditioning, and that child will not have a heart that needs operating on. You remove the preconditioning, and you will discover that you will remove disease from the earth. You will remove every child disease that is ever known. You will remove every form of human disease. Now you begin to see the importance of motherhood. The mother plays the key role. She's more important than the scientist, and she's more important than the minister. They are born of mothers. She is here to bring the Christ to earth. Her function is to develop a virgin consciousness which has no belief in evil, which has been spiritually educated, so that she can live that prenatal period during which she's bearing a child with a complete pure awareness that this is the kingdom of God. And that child born of that virgin consciousness will look at viruses that we have considered disease-bearing, and that child will touch the virus as Jesus touched the leper, and there will be no reaction, because the pattern of behavior will not have been embedded in the psyche of that child. Every mother, in time, will learn that this is her function. And when she does, we will begin to see why the two greatest commandments were to love God and to love thy neighbor. Divine love is the method through which we go back into trance and take off, erase, eliminate, dissolve the preconditioning of our pre-infantile days. Divine love is the method with which we approach being reborn of the Spirit and nullify the preconditioning of the human mind. Now, when Jesus was asked, what are the great commandments, what is the greatest, he gave us those two for that reason. But we have taken the meaning of love and we have diluted it. We think love is being nice to people. We think love is going next door to our neighbor and giving them a cup of flour. We think love is doing the good things. And they are important, but they're not the meaning of divine love. We must see that divine love is similar to righteousness. It wasn't sufficient to be perfectly righteous as a human being. That wasn't sufficient. Your righteousness had to exceed the most humanly righteous people on the earth in order for you to see the kingdom of heaven. Now, love is the same way. Your love must exceed human love. And to learn how to let your love exceed human love is a very delicate but important function, and its importance is this. Only when your love exceeds human love will you nullify within you the preconditioning of your consciousness during your prenatal period. You won't do it humanly. You won't do it psychologically. You won't do it through psychiatry. You won't do it through learning about psychosomatic medicine. You won't do it through psychocybernetics. You will not build these towers of Babel. Only through divine love can you erase the thermostats of the human consciousness. Now we're going to discuss divine love from that point of view, because now you're prepared to know the importance of it. Two commandments. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, mind, and soul. And the other like unto it, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Now in these two are many facets, not of human love, but of divine love. And this is driving us to exceed that kind of human love which says my neighbor needs my lawnmower so he can have it. It's trying to make us see that our righteousness, our love, must exceed every human concept that we have. And it's not enough for 30 million Americans today to learn about loving their neighbors humanly, because that will erase no preconditioning in their consciousness. They will still continue to react to the virus, to react to the earthquake, to react to every disease on the face of the earth, because the behavior patterns are embedded in the consciousness. And you cannot, through human love, erase them any more than you can tell someone who's hypnotized, now it won't happen anymore. And it will still continue to happen. You've got to take them back into trance. And you've got to be reborn, totally reborn, and have every dial unset. Now love, divine love, does this. And only divine love does this. Divine love releases you in such a way that it opens you from a preconditioned state, which is the human inheritance of every person on the face of the earth. Divine love opens you from that, releases the power of truth, lets divine truth move through your consciousness, slowly nullifying step by step every preconditioned pattern of behavior. And lo and behold, divine truth, released by the power of divine love, which must come first, releases the preconditioned patterns of behavior. And lo and behold, for you, the evils of the world are without power. Now these stimuli will always appear to everyone on the face of the earth, but only those who have had the susceptibility or the pattern of behavior built into their consciousness will respond, and they'll think that they had to have this. Now love has been stressed throughout your Bible. Only we have watered it down to the belief in human goodness, a form of human behavior. Now, it isn't that. It is the removal of this preconditioning. Now, let's look and see how important love is just by seeing the many times it is mentioned. We can't begin to touch them all because there are two pages full of notations on love mentioned in the Bible. But behind them, you will begin to see a meaning. Now we'll go back into the Old Testament. Jeremiah says, "The Lord hath appeared of old unto me, saying, Yea, I have loved thee with an everlasting love. Therefore with loving kindness have I drawn thee," or created thee. You see, the entire creation attributed to those 6 days of, or 6 degrees. This is a total, complete act of divine love. And divine love is permeating every square inch of the spiritual creation. So that actually, divine love is the very substance of which you are made. Now in your preconditioned state, and this is shocking, in your preconditioned state, in your embryonic state, you are conditioned into the belief that you are flesh and blood, and you are not. You have no way of knowing it, because at the moment of birth, that is when this preconditioning becomes your material consciousness. Jesus was not preconditioned to the belief that he was flesh and blood. And therefore he did not move in a flesh and blood universe. He was unconditioned. The light of the consciousness of Mary became the light of his consciousness, and he declared his unconditioned state. He said, "I am the light. I am not flesh and blood, I am the light. But you who have been conditioned to believing that you are flesh and blood, you also are the light. You are the light of the world." Now how do you think we are going to make a transition from a material universe to a spiritual universe while we are still conditioned to the belief that this is a material universe? You see, love is taking us through and back into the rebirth. Now, Jesus didn't have to be reborn. There was no rebirth necessary because there was no necessity to remove his conditioning. He had none. But you and I, conditioned must be unconditioned or reborn. Now, Jeremiah knew about love. John knew about love. Jesus knew about love. You and I are going to graduate and know about love. Let's go to Matthew. The two commandments. The Pharisees had heard that he put the Sadducees to silence, and so they were gathered together. And then one of them, which was a lawyer, asked him a question, tempting him and saying, "Master, which is the great commandment in the law?" This lawyer, obviously capable of good cross questioning, you know. He had him on the witness stand now, and he was going to trip him up. "Which is the great commandment in the law?" And Jesus said unto him, "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart." Now, to love the Lord thy God with all thy heart is what we all want to do once we have decided that's the thing to do. And so the other 30 million church members today are learning how to love the Lord, their God, with all their heart. But we're going to have to see that these words do not mean what those 30 million church members are going to learn. To love the Lord thy God must be clarified. Jesus taught, "The kingdom of God is within you." Jesus taught of a God who is called the Father within. And so you now must change that phrase to read his meaning. Love the Lord, the Father within you, with all thy heart. And that throws a completely new meaning into the first commandment, which is the greatest commandment. Love the Father within you. Now, to love the Father within you means that you must turn from those forces that are outside of you and see that the Father within you is the power of the universe. Now, there up in the sky we have a planet, and it's revolving around the sun. It goes at a certain speed. And while it revolves, it also turns on its own axis at a certain speed. And lo and behold, it continues to do this interminably, unchanging. It maintains one speed around the sun, another speed on its own axis, and it always maintains the same distance from the sun. And here's another planet. Now, it moves around the sun at a different speed. And it moves around its axis at a different speed. One goes at 30, revolves around its own axis every 30 years, another one every day. And here's another planet. It moves at a different speed around the sun and around its own axis at a different speed. And you spin them out, 9, 10, 11, 12. Each is at a different speed around the sun. Each is unchanging in that speed. Each is continuous, perpetual motion. What's keeping it up? What is this invisible force? Science says, oh, it's just mutual attraction and repulsion. Science will send up a little two-bit missile and make a big smell about it. Look what we did. But here, the force behind the universe puts up 12 planets, and science says, oh, nothing happening up there. Mutual attraction and repulsion. But look at our little missile. Look at this great satellite we sent up. And of course, that little missile has to come down. It can't stay forever. There is a force, and you must recognize it. And that same force moves over the earth and takes the oceans and turns them, reverses them, changes the tide. Science didn't put those fish in the ocean. Science doesn't make vegetation come up through the ground. Science does none of these things. Science is a little preconditioned man. Religion is a little preconditioned man. But there is behind it all a force. that maintains it all, inviolate, even to the scientist. He'll never take the sun and pull it out of the sky. He'll never change the earth from rotating on its axis. He'll never find a way to create life. He'll create an imitation. What is that force? Do you see, that force is love. That is divine love. And that force put you in this room, and that force put you on this earth. And that force, just as it continues to turn the planets, that force is functioning your heart. That force is functioning your lungs. That force is functioning the cells of your being. That force is always functioning, fulfilling itself. And until you permit that force to come through your consciousness, which has been preconditioned to reject that force, you are separated from the fullness of the force, and you must show forth problems. Love of God through you is the removal of every problem you can have.